Hello, everyone, and welcome to an Imperfect Athlete special. Today is going to be a little bit different. I won't be talking to an athlete or a coach about their mistakes, but rather, we are going to have a look at two popular Netflix shows, Cheer and Last Chance U. More specifically, I'm going to have a look at what kind of performance environments are created in both those teams. Now, I want to warn before we start, there will be spoilers in this episode. If you have not watched both shows, stop now, go watch them. And also that everything I say is my personal opinion, using my background as a mental performance trainer and coach to analyze these environments. However, that I can only base it on the stuff that you see in the show. But with that being said, let's go and have a look at these two teams. Now, Last Chance U follows the Eastern Mississippi Community College football team, a junior college football team in Scuba, Mississippi. The show gets its name because for many athletes there, it is their last chance to get into bigger college programs and have a shot at making the professional leagues. The players that are there are most often not there because they want to be. Throughout the first season, several athletes and coaches point out that the goal of being in Scuba is to get out of Scuba. The hope for all the athletes is that through their performance in this league and on this team, they will get noticed and receive that all-important scholarship offer. The reason these athletes are in junior college varies a lot. Some didn't have the academics coming out of high school to qualify for a Division I school. Some came here because they weren't getting playing time in their Division I program. And some came here because they were kicked out from their programs due to behavioral problems. The bottom line is, everyone on the team is here for a reason. Cheer is about the Navarro College cheer team in Texas. Contrary to what cheerleaders might be portrayed as in high school teen dramas, competitive cheerleading is a combination of dance, cheer, and extremely high-level and risky gymnastic moves. Think about throwing people up several meters into the air while they flip multiple times, and the only thing breaking their fall is being caught by two men. The documentary follows this team as they prepare for the national championship. We follow the journey of several athletes, many of whom have troubled backgrounds because of family issues such as absent parents and troubles with their environment accepting their sexuality. I started off watching not knowing what to expect, but within one episode was sucked in by the dedication, commitment, and sheer complexity and danger of the whole operation. At first glance, you might ask yourself, why would you look at these two shows and want to compare them? It is worth having a look at both performance environments, since there are a lot of similarities between the two teams. First and most obviously, both teams are defending national champions in their respective sport and division, and are looking to defend those titles. But the similarities run a lot deeper. Last Chance U is, as mentioned before, the last chance for athletes to get their life in order and get a better life. This holds true for a lot of the athletes in cheer as well. Many of them would not get an education if they weren't good at cheerleading. As we can see in both shows, for many athletes, their sport is the difference between a darker path of violence and criminality and a prosperous future. Looking at and analyzing both of these performance environments can show us a whole bunch of things, including the effect and costs of creating certain expectations and using a particular style of communication. But most importantly, it provides the opportunity for you to ask yourself, do I want to create or operate in an environment like this? What parts do I like, and what parts do I want to make sure I never incorporate or tolerate? So let's take a deeper dive into the performance environments of both Last Chance U and Cheer. More specifically, I want to look at what performance expectations there are and how they are communicated, what the underlying motivation is for athletes in that environment, and finally, I want to have a look at the coaching style of both coaches. One of the first things I look for when analyzing an environment are the expectations. There's a difference between process, performance, and outcome expectations. Outcome refers to the result at the end, wins, titles, and championships. Performance expectations are what level of play and execution needs to be reached in order to achieve the outcome. And the process expectations talk about what needs to be done in order to reach a certain level of performance. If we look at our two environments, we can see that in both situations, the expectations of outcome are communicated extremely clearly, repeatedly, and straightforwardly. Win a national title. Nothing else will do. And surprisingly, the road to a national title is pretty similar as well. In a football season, in order to get a chance at that title, you have to be ranked number one or number two in the nation. These rankings are subjective, which effectively means that you cannot lose any match and have to win big in order to get your chance. In cheer, there's only one competition, and you have to perform at your best at that competition. Scoring in the competition is subjective, just like the ranking system in football. The message in both cases is simple. You cannot afford any setback, any failure, any lapse in concentration, or you're done. However, this is also where the similarities stop in terms of expectations. Because if we look one step lower than the outcome, to the performance expectations, the story changes dramatically. Remember that the performance expectations are what a team needs to do in order to reach their outcome. For example, in soccer, you could say that if you score 2 goals per game, you will reach a top 3 finish in the league. Or in basketball, if you can score, let's say, 30% of your 3-point shots, you will make it to the NBA. In our two cases, there's a very big difference in terms of how these expectations are broken down and how they are communicated, one being effective and one being problematic. This brings me to the first spoiler of the episode. So again, if you haven't watched both shows and don't want to hear how it ends, pause now, go watch it, and then come back to this podcast later. In cheer, there's a whole segment about how the coach is amazing at playing the scorecard. What they mean by that is that the coach explains to the athletes how the scoring works and what they have to do in order to maximize their score. They also discuss that if they optimize their scoring and still get beaten, they are okay with that. One example of this is the so-called zero routine. Everyone in the show keeps talking about this, and it basically means that if they execute their routine with 0 deduction points, they will win. On top of that, they discuss what gives them extra points and even practice failure situations and what athletes can do in order to optimize their score in the case that something goes wrong. Furthermore, the process expectations are pretty clear as well here. The best example is the arbitrary number of 41 full outs. A full out is executing the total routine in one go, and a big thing in preparing for competition. The team is told that if they do 41 full outs, they are ready to compete. That is the process goal to be reached. Why do I call 41 arbitrary? Well, because it's 14 in reverse, the number of national titles the team will have if they win this year. The number 41 itself does not have a reason, besides that I expect it's roughly similar to what everyone does. But doing it this way helps everyone understand and remember the number. So it is very clear to the athletes what they individually need to do in order to succeed at their outcome expectations, and what milestones they need to reach along the way. What makes this team so strong in their performance and process expectations is that they are very clearly stated and communicated. Everyone knows what they are and what they need to do. And this brings me to the performance and process expectations for the East Mississippi football team. They need to win, and they need to win big. A substantial part in reaching the outcome is that the team needs to run up the score in order to get a better ranking. But it's never explained by how much. The team plays several games that they are not going to lose under any circumstances, but there's no communication about what running up the score means. However, more problematic is the way the staff communicates how the team should play. The phrase is, "We have to hit them in the mouth. You need to give them a good ass whooping. You have to hit them hard until they don't get up," are mentioned frequently before and during games. However, every time somebody is getting a bit too violent or is aggressive after a play, the coaches are shouting at everyone to calm down. Well, which one is it? Aggressive hit them in the mouth or calm down? You can see in many athletes that they are confused about the expectation when they are on the field. You see, it is impossible to tell an athlete to do two things at the same time. That athlete can't be aggressive and calm down at the same time. You can't say, "Be aggressive," but not that aggressive. And this finally is what costs EMCC their shot at a national title. In their last regular season game, they all warn the athletes that the opponent is going to play dirty and try to make them fight back. They mention that the team can't get drawn into that with the playoffs coming up. All week leading up to this game, they reiterate this message. So you would think that it's pretty straightforward for the athletes. However, in the pregame speech, the staff again talks about being aggressive. They even talk about hitting them between the whistles. So what happens? After a late and dirty hit, one of the Mississippi players fights back. And to make matters worse, his teammates, who have been told to protect their brother by the staff all year, run out on the pitch and attack the opponents, leading to an all-out brawl at the end, ending the season for everyone. What we can learn from looking at the expectations put on both teams is that when we talk about expectations, we need to be sure that they are communicated clearly, that everyone truly and fully understands what is required. But most of all, we should really consider the full consequences of the expectations we set, because people will act on them, even if that isn't the right thing to do in that circumstance. Okay, so there are a lot of differences in terms of expectations between these two teams. Another aspect that I look at when analyzing a sporting environment is what the underlying motivation is for the athletes and coaches involved. It is important to know what drives people, because it can tell you a lot about how they will behave in certain situations. However, when looking at motivation, a mistake that is commonly made is that people only look at the quantity of motivation. How much someone is motivated to achieve something will have an effect on how far they are willing to push themselves in order to reach that goal. However, we need to also look at the quality of motivation. What I mean by that is, how strong are the underlying factors that make up the motivation? This will determine how stable and resilient the motivation is over time. Without this getting too technical, I think it would be better to explain this idea of quantity and quality of motivation through a set of examples. Let's start with an example of a situation in which there's high quantity, low quality motivation. Can you think of something? Punishment. The fear of being punished is a really strong motivator, especially when the punishment is something you truly do not want to happen. For instance, sticking to the speed limit when a cop car is directly behind you is something almost all of us do. The fear of getting a ticket, a type of punishment, is motivation enough to not speed. However, this is a really low quality of motivation. It does not remain stable over time. Because the moment the cop car is gone, you don't fear the ticket as much anymore, and start being a little bit more lenient with the speed limit. Punishment is one of the most used methods of motivation, yet it is one of the weakest in terms of quality. Now let's flip it around. Can you think of a situation in which there is really low quantity but high quality of motivation? Or in other words, something that is very stable but not very strong? This is probably a little harder to imagine, but doing the right thing situations come to mind. These are situations such as returning a found student card or giving back a glove somebody dropped in the bus. I believe most, if not all of us, are motivated to do these things. Yet, if there's anything that stands in the way, we tend not to do it. When noticing someone drops a glove in the bus, we shout a few times, maybe chase that person to the door if we happen to go the same way. But if that doesn't work, how many people would do more in order to return that glove? This leaves us with the sweet spot of motivation. High quality, high quantity. Any ideas? It's having fun. Enjoying a certain activity, or having intrinsic motivation, as it is called in scientific terms, is the strongest and most stable source of motivation. Not only is it a powerful factor to make us do something, but it is also very stable. Now, with this newfound understanding of motivation, let's return to our teams and look at the quantity and quality of motivation in these athletes. First of all, a lot of athletes have similar motivations for being on their respective teams. It might be their only chance of getting education, or it is their way out of a dangerous lifestyle. On top of that, for most of the athletes on both teams, it is their last chance of reaching these things. Taking this into account, you can imagine that the quantity of motivation on these teams is very high. You can also see this in the behavior the athletes display. Every single one of the athletes in both shows is willing to push themselves to, and probably in the opinion of a lot of people, beyond their breaking point in order to succeed. The stakes are that high for them, they cannot afford to fail. We see athletes compete through injuries, take immense risks, and often put their physical and mental well-being second to succeeding at their goal. All very clear signs of high quantity of motivation. But what about the quality of motivation? How resilient and stable are these sources? There are many situations in which the quality of motivation on the EMCC football team leads to some problematic behavior. Most of this revolves around the athlete's performance in the classroom. In order to achieve what they want, a scholarship at the next level, the football players have not only do well on the field, but also in the classroom. And the latter is for many a bigger challenge than playing football. What is keeping them on point is the motivation that comes from possibly getting a Division I scholarship. So their motivation is stable as long as there is a chance that they will get their offer. However, the moment that opportunity is gone, or is perceived to be gone, the motivation is gone. And we see this happen in several different ways. For instance, injuries that are preventing players from competing seem to lead to low class attendance more often than not. Athletes that are not getting much playing time tend to say things like, "Why am I doing this?" And most noticeably, after the team gets disqualified from a national championship game due to the massive fight during the last regular season game, numerous players stop going to class, and some even think about leaving altogether. Although the quantity of motivation is extremely high, the quality is not, leaving the athletes vulnerable to disengagement. Now, let's look at cheer. Again, the quantity of motivation is high, but in this case, so is the quality. Different to Last Chance U, this isn't the last resort to achieve a distant dream, the NFL. In cheer, this is the goal, and as many athletes mention, their last chance to participate in the sport they love. That last word is key. Remember I mentioned that fun is the strongest form of motivation? Sure, for many athletes, this is their one and only chance to get education or escape their previous life, just like the football players. But different to the football players, there is no next step to look for. This is the final step. And therefore, the motivation is more stable, the quality is higher. Does this mean that the team and coaches in cheer are doing a better job at motivating their athletes than the team and coaches in Last Chance U? Not necessarily. Quality of motivation is mostly determined by the individual athlete and the environment. Cheerleading only has one competition at the end of the season. And we don't get to see what would happen with class attendance after that competition if the team wouldn't win. It is easier for the motivation to be stable since there are less opportunities for it to change. In a football season, if you lose the first game of the season, your chance is gone, and so is the motivation. The cheerleading season does not have a similar opportunity for motivation to be lost. Motivation is a complex concept that is way more than just you need to want it more. The circumstances and environment play just as much as a role as does the individual. So it is important to not only talk about where the motivation is coming from, but also how strong that motivation is, as well as how stable and resilient to adversity it is. So far, we've looked at expectations and motivation, two important factors in shaping a performance environment. Now let's take a look at the leaders, or in this case, the coaches. Buddy Stevens in Last Chance U and Monica Aldama in Cheer. If you have seen both shows, you might expect me to now talk about how great Monica is. She is tough but supporting, as many athletes say, like a mother to them. And you might expect me to say that Buddy is terrible because he shouts and curses all the time and he gets into fights with referees and whatnot. But that is not actually what I want to talk about, because what I want to talk about is in what ways are they the same rather than different. I certainly have my opinions about both coaching styles, but there's no denying that both are capable of building an extremely successful program, and that cannot be coincidence. This raises a question though. How can two coaches that are so different from each other both be successful? What makes these two coaches good? There's one particular thing that both coaches have in common. It is that they care. They care about hard work, execution, the way their program looks, about winning championships. But most importantly, they care about every single person on their team. They're tough on the athletes, but only because they want them to succeed. This is shown mostly through their relationship with former athletes on the team. Coach Buddy is seen texting and calling former team members who made it to the next level to congratulate them. In Cheer, alumni keep stopping by to say hi and see how practice is going. Monica even makes every single current athlete know about the legacy of the alumni. Whether you agree with the style of coaching of either of these two coaches or not, and I certainly have plenty of opinions about the behavior that is displayed by these coaches, they are good at what they do because they pour their heart and soul into the people that make up these teams. When watching both Last Chance U and Cheer, it is easy to get caught up in the cutthroat atmosphere and tension, and think to yourself, this is terrible, and I would never want to be part of anything like this. That is certainly the thing I thought the first time I watched it. However, when you start taking a deeper look into these two teams, you start to see a lot of good things and understand why some of the behavior is happening. Don't get me wrong, I am most certainly not saying that these environments are perfect. Both coaches have a lot to learn in terms of empowering coaching styles, transformational leadership, the possible negative impact certain communication can have on mental well-being, and many other things. And I do want to point out that the way concussions are handled and treated are far from acceptable standards in both shows. However, there are a lot of things these environments have that are helping athletes get the best out of themselves and others. Remember, a situation in which everyone is happy and comfortable is not necessarily a situation in which performance, both as a team and as an individual, is optimized. If you want to be best at what you do, start feeling comfortable being uncomfortable. And this is something that both teams do very well. I hope you enjoyed this special episode of The Imperfect Athlete. I sure had a lot of fun making this. I want to remind you that everything I said is based on what you can see in the shows, and it is merely my opinion using my background as a mental performance trainer and as a coach. Please let me know what your thoughts were about both shows on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can find me as JWK Mental Performance Training or visit jwkmentalperformance.com. And I will see you in the next episode.